Sean, my good friend. What up, biatch? What up, biatch? I got a book coming out. Well, not yet. There's a few moral issues. You may want to contact me first, because I'm telling about my life, you being part of it. Well, hell, call me. But in truth, I'd rather you not. The book will be so much better if I don't fall for your shit. But if you say don't say that, I'll remember what your religious fake ass said about me in your bullshit book. Anyone wanting to see real will. I ain't protecting yo ass. Again, substance abuse is a serious issue. It's a day-to-day thing. They say you take it one day at a time. I mean, for God's sakes, I can't sit here and claim that I've ever had substance abuse issues before. The closest thing that I could possibly compare to this, and it's a horrible example, I admit, but for fuck's sake, I used to be addicted to Rice-A-Roni. This is just on completely off the rails now, but I used to be addicted to fucking chicken Rice-A-Roni. I shit you not. It's delicious. Anybody out there that has never had Rice-A-Roni, chicken Rice-A-Roni, try it. You'll love it. All of this bullshit with Immortal and the network, and, you know, one week Mick Foley is the head of the network, and then 2 weeks later, because he has a falling out with the company, all of a sudden, oh, you know, Spike is fine with putting Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff back in charge. And then a couple of weeks later, now you got Sting on television talking about how, you know, the network is unhappy with the job they're doing, when I thought a couple of weeks earlier the network was very happy with the job they were doing. And Sting claims, well, I'm the network rep. And then later on he says, well, I just lied. I'm not really the network rep. Who gives a fuck? I mean, TNA does these stupid storylines, and they change. They change so many times. They lose track of what they're doing themselves. They don't even know what they're doing half the time. Hulk Hogan is in the middle of all of this. And one would think that by Punk bringing up Stephanie's name, it would disqualify her from the running. So who was it? Well, you know, was it Johnny Ace? Was it Vince McMahon? Was it a drunk Scott Hall just fucking around with Nash in the middle of a bender after the Juggalo show? Who knows? We also got an email from Gary. He's a listener from Singapore. He doesn't have a question, but he says he's a very big fan of the Sound Off, which makes every Monday very special for him, because it's a different time zone. He says, keep up the good work, and keep bringing the eargasm to us. And I had to mention that, because I love that. I've never thought of the Sound Off as an eargasm, but I guess it is. Just, you know, bring the tissues and have a great time. I apologize. That was an appalling comment on my part. Dolph Ziggler? Don't even get me started on that one. Dolph Ziggler. I mean, that's probably the one name I've ranted about more than any other. Actually, I have a funny story, kind of a funny story about Dolph Ziggler. A little anecdote. I don't think I've ever shared this on here before. The girl I used to date, probably earlier in the year, and I remember I was setting up the printer for her laptop. And when you set up a printer, you have to oftentimes give the printer a name. And I decided to name her printer Dolph Ziggler. It's the first thing that popped into my head. Don't ask me why. I have no logical explanation for it. It's the first thing that popped in my head. So I put Dolph Ziggler. And that was that. That was the end of it. So one day she happened to be watching one of the shows with me. I guess probably would have been on a Friday night. And Dolph came on. They flashed his name on the bottom of the screen. And she screamed. She says, hey, that's my printer. She had no idea where the name Dolph Ziggler came from. She probably thought it came with that name. It's some sort of foreign name. Maybe it's like a German printer or something. I don't know. But when she saw this guy on TV and the name Dolph Ziggler flashed on the bottom of the screen, she had a coronary. She wasn't angry. She was, like, shocked. She had no idea that I named her printer after a wrestler. And a wrestler with a shitty name at that. I never did find out, actually, if she renamed the printer. Quite frankly, I don't really give a shit, but I thought it was funny. The person wrote Wild Bill Ass as his name. And quite frankly, I think that is a much better name. To have a wrestler out there called Bill Ass, that's just the greatest wrestling name of all time. I'm sorry. In fact, I would completely be in favor of Dolph Ziggler renaming himself Wild Bill Ass. Because who wouldn't want to see Wild Bill Ass run wild in WWE? Well, maybe not some of the men, but I will say, though, that the bad part about all this is I am sick to death of them using the legends to endorse Cena in some sort of effort to get the fans to like him. It's pathetic. It's pandering. It doesn't work. It didn't work here with Piper. It didn't work with Mick Foley a few weeks ago. It didn't work with Bret Hart. And it didn't work when Rock shook his hand the night after WrestleMania 27. You know, in all of those cases, the legend ended up getting booed, right along with Cena. You know, Randy Savage could rise from the grave and hand John Cena a ceremonial Slim Jim in the center of the ring, and the fans would still boo him. So John Cena came out to open the show, and he was angry for a change. He embraced the hate, I guess. Couldn't understand how he lost to John Laurinaitis. I can. It's because you're stupid. You had the man beat and you let him go. That makes you a fool. Now, if you guessed that he came out and told jokes, ding ding, you win. More comedy bullshit, and, you know, it really hit me at this point with Cena being absent from the pay-per-view the night before. He was absent from the entire first hour of the show. Things felt a lot fresher without him in the picture. He really was not missed. Maybe by the kids, but fuck the kids. I don't care about the kids. I don't have any kids.
But what I have gotten backlash from vegans on Twitter is they say that your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
There's a person in front of me. Who are you and what did you do with Edge?
I ate him.
You can't see him, but Edge has lost a couple inches on the top here. Did you lose a bet?
No, did you?
Okay. Oh, my God. Dude.
I did get bold this week on an interview. Arnon did say that you and I were the greatest tag team of all time.
But what about that? Doesn't anybody understand?
Well, for a couple of years, actually, you were talking about wishing The Rock would come back.
Yeah.
You know, even just come back and do the eyebrow once and leave.
Yep.
It seems like The Rock came back, and there was a lot of animosity there. I'm wondering where that comes from.
It's just a guy who takes such a break. You can go back and check the timeline. The very first night he comes back, he says he's never leaving. He loves everybody. Like, just come back and be the guy you want to see. Say you love the business and say you love everybody after you've been here for a few years. I never even stood out on Front Street and said, this is what I do, this is what I love, until I was 8 years in the game. You know, because I know it's cliche. And I think when he throws stuff around like that, it makes it harder for all of us to go out and say, I love the WWE, because a guy like that will make it cliche.
Oh, the force is strong with this one. This is the special 5-year anniversary edition of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here on SEScoops.com. It is Sunday, November 11th, 2012. I am the Solid Monster. Always a nice thing to go back down memory lane and listen to some of those old clips, if for no other reason, not to hear my own voice, but just to hear about all the crazy shit that goes on in the world of pro wrestling. It just provides me with loads and loads of content, just endless hours of content, which I very much appreciate. First things first, actually, before we talk about anything else, this is a very special day, not just because this is the 5th anniversary sound-off, but even more importantly, today is Veterans Day here in the U.S. I know it's being observed as a holiday in many places tomorrow, although many of us do not have off from work, unfortunately. But those who do, congratulations. But today is actually Veterans Day here in this country, so take a moment to think about the men and women who put themselves in harm's way, and even those who don't, but provide service to their country in some other form or fashion. We should probably do that more than just one day each year, but it is Veterans Day, and that is a special day for a lot of people, including some of you listening, I'm sure, who either have served or know people, perhaps in your family, friends who have served. So please take a moment to acknowledge Veterans Day. And I want to take a moment to acknowledge all of you, and as I've done before, thank you. Thank you for listening to my show. Thank you for writing into me with questions and comments, the good, the bad, the ugly, everything in between. It has been a fun time for me to be doing this show for SE Scoops for 5 years. When I say that I can't believe it's been 5 years, I mean it. 5 years to me is a long time, and I can't believe that I've been sitting here doing the sound off for as long as I have been. It certainly doesn't feel quite that long. It doesn't feel as long as a 3-hour Raw. You know, a 3-hour Raw feels like 5 years. This show does not. And I want to thank each and every one of you for making this show as successful as it's been. We have more and more people tuning in each week. I'm sure a lot of that has to do with you guys, word of mouth, recommending it to friends, family, and other people as well. And I very much appreciate that. I can't really put into words what that means to me, because I genuinely enjoy doing this. I genuinely enjoy putting that intro together, all the work that goes along with doing this show. And I just want to take a moment here at the top to say thank you. Here's to 5 more years. For those people who were worried that this was the final sound off, I think I phrased one of my tweets earlier in the week in such a way that I kind of spooked some people who thought maybe this was the final show. It is not. You can rest easy. Hopefully there will be many more yet to come. This was a big week. This was, I mentioned Veterans Day being today, but Election Day actually took place on Tuesday here in the U.S., and obviously it was the presidential election that was the big race. Obama versus Romney, whose side are you on, if any? But there were other races that took place as well, including many Senate races, one of which was the Senate race in the state of Connecticut between Democrat Chris Murphy and the Republican candidate Linda Moneybags McMahon. And as I predicted, as virtually everybody predicted, I think, except people associated with the McMahon campaign, Democrat Chris Murphy beat Linda McMahon handily, winning the race for senator. Murphy was first declared the winner only 40 minutes or so after polls closed in the state, earning 55% of the vote compared to McMahon's 43%. So, in other words, she got demolished. This is my shocked face here. You can't see it right now, but trust me, I'm making one as we speak. This marks the second straight loss for Linda. She spent over $90 million of her and her husband's money on not one, but two failed Senate bids. She now has the distinction of being the first and only person in the history of American politics to have spent that much money on a pair of failed bids to attain federal office. That was an interesting little factoid I was not aware of before. By comparison, Murphy, I looked into this. I was curious how much money Chris Murphy spent. Murphy spent about $20 million on his campaign, which in and of itself is ridiculous. I think this whole system of spending when it comes to elections is so fucked it's not even funny. This is why we're stuck with the people we have in office. Why would any sane, rational person like you or me want to bother getting involved in politics and trying to make a difference when most of our time would just be spent fundraising and smooching donors? If I wanted to beg old white people for money, I know exactly where to go. I'd go bang on Linda McMahon's door. The bigger issue for Republicans is that Linda has now arguably cost the GOP two Senate seats in the last 2 years. That's a big deal. She got beat by Richard Blumenthal last year, and you know, he would have been a tougher opponent either way. That race is a little less clear if somebody else would have taken Linda's place against Blumenthal in the election. It could have gone either way. But last year, you know, Linda beat a man by the name of Rob Simmons in the Republican primaries, who would have been a much better opponent for Blumenthal. And this year, she beat Chris Shays, who almost certainly would have beaten Chris Murphy. Murphy is still a relative unknown in the political world. It's not like he's this master politician. Hulk Hogan is probably a better politician than Chris Murphy is. But suffice to say, she's probably on a lot of people's shit list right now, especially considering how badly the Republicans made out in the election this week. And to that, I just say, as far as Linda McMahon is concerned, hey, there's always Senator of Raw. I'm not saying I'd actually want to see it, but I'm just saying. There's still time to live your dream, Linda. There's still time. Actually, one of the most entertaining moments came during Linda's concession speech, which I'm sure many of you have seen by now. It's up on YouTube if you haven't. At one point during her speech, she goes out of her way to thank her husband, Vince McMahon, who flew back from England along with Triple H to be there in the event that Linda won. That was pretty funny, actually. So she acknowledges Vince and the camera. He's kind of hiding out on stage, off camera. He clearly does not want to be seen. And for a few seconds there, the camera pans over, and there's Vince McMahon standing there looking like the saddest person in the entire world. He looks like somebody ran over his dog with their car, then put the car in reverse and backed up over the pooch. He looked very sad. And let's be honest here, you would be too. So would I if my wife blew almost $100 million of my money. I'd be in tears. I don't know how Vince was able to keep his composure at all. So that was kind of sad. But again, when you look at the whole situation, to spend that kind of money on any political campaign is a complete joke. But just the idea that Linda would spend that sort of money on a Senate campaign, or, you know, two Senate campaigns, but still, it's just preposterous. And in the end, the Connecticut voters saw through her, which is why they didn't vote for her, and her favorability dipped quite a bit towards the end there. And I can tell you that even though I'm not a Connecticut voter, I live in New York, so I'm in what they consider the tri-state area, which is New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. I was inundated with Linda McMahon TV ads for weeks to the point where I almost went insane. I mean, it was just completely ridiculous, and basically she put too much of herself out there to the point where people got sick of seeing her. Just like a lot of wrestling fans over the years have gotten sick of seeing too many McMahons on TV, now the entire world knows how we all feel. They feel our pain. So it didn't pay off for Linda in the end, and she has said that she has no interest in running for political office again. She says that now. Who knows what she'll say in 4 years. Is she going to run in 2016? No, I don't believe that at all. She's not going to run in 2016 anyway, because they would never, ever allow her to be the candidate. She'd have to run as a third-party candidate, and that's not going to happen. So I think her political career is done. Maybe she could be president of the PTA or something like that, or just take my idea. But she ain't running for senator. Those days are done. And as I predicted also to the people who thought that a Linda McMahon loss would mean the death of PG and things are going to turn around now in WWE, think again. The two of them have absolutely nothing to do with each other. And PG is here to stay regardless of whether or not Linda McMahon is senator or not. Take it or leave it. Some of you don't care. Some of you think that's the worst thing in the world. It's not going to have any impact on the product at all, except maybe on Raw this Monday night. I do wonder if we are going to get some sort of segment, perhaps, Vince McMahon's way of venting after all the money that got flushed down the toilet bowl. Maybe some sort of skit, as we've seen before. I guess we'll find out. Speaking of Raw, episode 1015, emanating from Birmingham, England this past Monday night. The WWE stars are overseas. I think they're still overseas, actually. It's a rough travel itinerary for those guys. I thought it was overall, it was an okay show. It wasn't a terrible show. It was a boring show. I mean, and maybe if you were there live, WWE doesn't come to England very often. I had a few people who listened to the show who wrote into me telling me about their experiences. They very much enjoyed being at Raw, as did I when I went to Raw in New Jersey several weeks ago. It's always more fun to go to these shows live, especially when you don't have a chance to do it all that often. But as a television viewer, it was a struggle. It was a struggle more so for some reason, more so this week than any other week recently, to stay awake in that third hour. It was around 10 o'clock, and I just could not believe there was another hour left in this show. So I had to go back and actually reread some of the results for what happened in that third hour, because I was in and out of consciousness. I was barely paying any attention. This show did not do a good job of keeping my attention, which means I can't be the only one. So that's a problem for them. It's a problem for them every single week. Even when they have a good show, it's just too goddamn long. We say it every week, and I'm going to keep saying it until they go back to 2 hours, which I think is inevitable. I just wish it would happen sooner rather than later. So that would be my best description of the show. Not a bad show, just a boring show. It was noteworthy for one reason at least, and that is because the Survivor Series main event, which was scheduled to be a traditional 10-man elimination Survivor Series match, has now been altered. The main event has been changed to a triple threat match. It will be for the WWE Championship. CM Punk will, in fact, be required to defend his title at Survivor Series. He won't be able to get away with hitting the one-year mark unchallenged. So there is still a chance that Punk could fall short of 1 year as champion, which would be just a disaster, in my opinion. He will defend against both John Cena, what else is new, and Ryback, who was screwed out of the championship by referee Brad Maddox at Hell in a Cell. At least that makes sense if you want to give Ryback a rematch. I don't know why you would want to do that. They went through a great deal of consternation, perhaps is the best word to use, in coming up with a finish for Hell in a Cell that didn't hurt Ryback, but they had to beat Ryback, which was not the ideal situation to be in. So you get past Hell in a Cell, and you come up with the Survivor Series match where Ryback will be captaining Team Foley. And in theory, you think to yourself, okay, it's kind of an interesting way to give Ryback a big victory, I would presume. He would have gone over, maybe be the sole survivor even of his team at Survivor Series. He can beat Punk without taking the championship. So he gets to keep his momentum going into TLC and whatever else they may have planned. And now what they've done is they've put themselves right back in a very similar position that they found themselves in last month. Now you have a three-way match. You can go with a finish that has John Cena being laid out, perhaps even by Ryback. Maybe Ryback gives John Cena the shell shock and leaves him laying and is 3 seconds away from winning the championship, but then Punk knocks him out of the ring, or Heyman distracts him or something, and Punk kind of sneaks in there and pins Cena. The problem with that is we just saw the same thing at SummerSlam in August. I'm pretty sure we saw the same finish there where, you know, Punk kind of snuck in there. Big Show was knocked out. Big Show may have been the one to lay out Cena, and he got the pin on Cena and retained the title. So now you're recycling finishes that you've done at least once, if not more than once, in recent history, which you also don't want to do. I mean, that you go back to the same finish for Survivor Series that you used for SummerSlam. I mean, I certainly would not want to go in that direction. So what else do you do? Do you go ahead and have Ryback win the championship? I just think it would be a huge mistake. We went through this already with Hell in a Cell. I gave my reasons why I think CM Punk should continue on as champion. He's going to face The Rock at the Royal Rumble. That's the big match. The Rock is already promoting the match on Twitter. He's getting people psyched up for it. I'm psyched up for it. I want to see The Rock and CM Punk. I think CM Punk deserves that match. It's a fresh opponent for The Rock. Somebody not named John Cena. I think it would be huge. It's a huge main event for the Rumble. And they could do it. Even if Punk loses the title, he could win it back, I guess, at TLC. I don't know. It takes the shine off. His whole gimmick, his whole reason for being is so CM Punk could come out on TV every week with Paul Heyman holding the title up high. And he can claim it's now been 340-something days or 350-something days as the WWE champion. Now, whatever they're building to with Punk and Rock at the Rumble, I presume Rock winning the championship, you know, Rock, then fine, let Rock be the one to end the reign. Rock can be the White Knight who comes in and puts this thing to bed once and for all, and then he can go on to WrestleMania and he can drop the title to Cena, if that's the plan. Or maybe Punk beats The Rock, and they change up whatever plans they have. Punk should not lose the championship before Royal Rumble. It just should not happen. So you're left with a situation where I don't really know what other finish you could do. I mean, I guess you could have Punk lay out Cena, and Ryback is distracted. It doesn't have to be Ryback laying out John Cena. I mean, there's different ways you can go about approaching this whole thing. But this concerns me. It concerns me because they went out on television one week and announced a main event for Survivor Series. Not only did they announce a main event for Survivor Series, but that whole Raw show 2 weeks ago was built around building a main event for a Survivor Series. The whole entire three-hour show, from the very first segment when Mick Foley came out to confront CM Punk and the match was made, the theme of the show was, who are the men going to be? Who's going to be on Team Punk? Who's going to be on Team Foley? 3 hours we had to sit through that show. The main event was not a match. The main event was announcing the teams, culminating in Ryback being picked by Mick Foley. And the very next week, Vince McMahon comes out on television and says, you know what, that's a pretty shitty idea. That's basically what he said. He was bashing Vicky Guerrero, who was the one who made the match in storyline. He said it was a crappy idea, and CM Punk should have to defend his championship at the pay-per-view. And then he makes this triple threat match. Now, I will say this. I posed this question on Twitter to many of you, a poll question. That being, do you like the idea of WWE changing the Survivor Series main event and it being a triple threat as opposed to a Survivor Series match? And a lot of you said yes. A lot of you agreed with the decision, and you said that the Survivor Series main event is now stronger than it was before. Even some people who like the idea of the traditional Survivor's matches feels that in 2012, those matches, especially in a main event, tag team matches of any kind just don't sell, and there's an argument to be made there. Look at Survivor Series a year ago. You had a traditional tag team match, Rock and John Cena as tag team partners, which was a mistake, against The Miz and R-Truth. I could do an entire show on reasons why that match either shouldn't have been made or why the match performed poorly. All things considered, it did not do as well as they had hoped it would. But the fact is, it was a tag team match, and tag team matches as main events on pay-per-views just don't sell, at least it seems that way in WWE. And the Survivor Series matches just don't have the same impact they used to have. It's not 1988 anymore. I like the Survivor Series elimination matches, but you know what? Is the Triple Threat a stronger main event? Will it add more buys? Yeah, probably will. It probably is a better idea. But they should have thought about that before they went on television and already announced one. It's just insane to me to come back the very next week and basically throw it all away. Where does this leave Mick Foley? Was he even mentioned at all on Raw this past Monday? I don't remember. Unless it was during my REM sleep during the third hour of the show, I don't recall him being mentioned at all. What does he think about all this? Has he tweeted about it? How does he feel about Vince McMahon changing the match? I guess Foley, there's now an empty space on Team Foley. He's going to have to replace Ryback. I've heard rumors that perhaps Ryback's replacement on Team Foley will end up being The Miz. And the first thing we saw on Raw Monday night was Miz quitting Team Punk. Isn't that kind of interesting? After what we talked about here on the Sound Off last week. I certainly was not against that idea. I thought that was a hell of a way to start off Raw, writing a very big wrong that they made from the week before. He never should have even been on Team Punk in the first place. So now, for now, Miz is out of the main event. He's out of the Survivor Series elimination match, I guess the now former main event. But there's rumors that perhaps he'll just end up on Team Foley, and I don't know if that means Miz is going to go babyface or what. I don't like the idea of Miz being in this match at all, quite frankly. So I hope that does not happen. But at least if he is on Team Foley, he's not on Team Punk. Team Punk now will have Wade Barrett in the place of The Miz. Again, something I talked about on the Sound Off last week. Why was Wade Barrett not put in that spot in the first place? I'm very happy. I give WWE credit for that. I'm very happy to see them replace Miz with Wade Barrett. It's the right move. You've got more to gain with Wade Barrett. Wade Barrett's going to be a world champion soon enough. Wade Barrett is much better in that spot than Miz ever was. So I like that. But this whole notion of them changing the main event over the course of a week, you know, it's one of those things that makes me worried about the outcome of the triple threat. That it goes to the point I was trying to make here, which is Vince McMahon is a little unstable. Maybe he's unstable because of all the money he lost in Linda McMahon's campaign. Maybe it sent them off the deep end. Maybe this is Vince McMahon unhinged that we're seeing now. He's throwing everything away. He's changing things. He's shaking things up. He changes the main event from one week to the next, and now he's going to change everything else and just put the title on Ryback. And he's going to go for broke with Ryback. And that's fine if that's what he wants to do. If he wants to put everything behind Ryback and sink or swim, we'll see if he succeeds. But the timing is all wrong. Taking the title off Punk is just a very, very bad idea. So I'm a little bit worried about what may be happening at Survivor Series. But that was the big story of Raw Monday Night, changing the entire main event after 1 week, just throwing everything away that whole show 2 weeks ago was built around and just saying, you know what, none of that shit even mattered. But I will say that the Triple Threat is a stronger main event. They should have announced that in the first place if that was their plan. And the Survivor Series match also was better off, not just because Wade Barrett has replaced Miz, but Dolph Ziggler is now going to be the captain of Team Punk, because it's no longer Team Punk, it's now Team Ziggler. So instead of doing what I thought they would do, which they seem to be building towards a John Cena-Dolph Ziggler match, because that storyline is still going, unfortunately, they've now slotted Ziggler in the Survivor Series match, and I like that too. Because now, at least Dolph Ziggler doesn't have to go in there and do a job to John Cena, which is the last thing he needs. I mean, it would have given him some rub to be in there with Cena in the first place, but I like the idea of Dolph Ziggler being able to captain his own Survivor Series team. So again, thumbs up. Good decision. But if you ever needed a sign that these people just have absolutely no idea what they're doing, just think the whole concept of Team Foley versus Team Miz, or rather Team Punk, I should say, is playing off that first promo from all those weeks ago before Hell in a Cell when Mick Foley came out. He cut that awesome promo on CM Punk. It looked like they might even be building something between Punk and Foley. Hopefully not a match, which was a big rumor for a while that they might be looking at that match for TLC. But it was Foley and Punk for a reason. And now, by changing all the major players in that match, it's almost completely pointless for Mick Foley to be involved at all. I mean, I guess now you could just do something with Foley and Ziggler. And there was actually a segment way back when. Actually, no, I don't know if there was, now that I think about it. I know that there was a segment. They did the stuff with Ziggler and Jericho, where Ziggler came out once and he kind of berated Jericho and talked about him being a has-been and he can't win the big one. I don't know if they ever did something like that with Ziggler and Foley. I don't know that they've ever had any sort of interaction. Maybe they have. But again, it's a great example that they don't know what they're doing. And it's a little troubling, I have to say. It's just one of those things where you don't know where they're going from 1 week to the next, and being unpredictable can be a really good thing or it can be a very bad thing. And we'll see how this ends up. But the actual matches for the pay-per-view are stronger as a result. The other thing that happened on Raw Monday night was Vince McMahon announced that Brad Maddox, the suspended referee who made his big Raw return on Monday night, he cut a promo. It was not a great promo. It was not the worst promo I've ever seen. But Brad Maddox was out there. He was telling people, giving reasons why he did what he did to Ryback. He said it was his decision. He was trying to make a name for himself. He was always too small or this or that, and you know, playing kind of a work shoot in a lot of ways. He was playing off a lot of things that people say about WWE and the people they recruit, so they kind of just put that in the promo and played off that a little bit. Vince McMahon came out and basically said to Maddox, you can earn a contract as a WWE superstar, which is what Maddox wants, which is why he did this in the first place. Not only a contract, but he will give Maddox a $1 million contract. I wonder if it's one of those tough enough $1 million contracts where you get like $250,000 in the first year and then they can cut you and not have to pay you the rest of the money. But he'll give him a $1 million contract if he can beat Ryback in a match next week. In fact, Maddox wanted the match with Ryback. He was the one who requested it. So this kid must have a death wish, and Vince McMahon basically just granted his wish and said that if he can actually beat Ryback, he will give him a $1 million contract. So we have a Brad Maddox-Ryback match set for Raw this coming Monday night. I will say this much, though. WWE did something this week. They put a clip on WWE.com. I thought it was a very cool move on their part. They posted a video from 2008 from Ohio Valley Wrestling, their former developmental territory before they moved everything to Florida. And in this video, Ryback, a young Ryan Reeves, is beating up a bunch of dudes, one of whom is Brad Maddox. You would never know it by looking at the footage. I mean, if I didn't know that Brad Maddox was the one he was beating up in this video, I probably never would have realized it. But I thought it was a very cool thing for them to do. I mean, I think they own that library, all the Ohio Valley stuff with a lot of those talents from over the years. As far as I know, they own that footage. They have it as part of their library. You know, when they launch, if they ever launch this new network, they could have a show, you know, kind of like maybe a Where Are They Now type show or something like that. They could air some of that old OVW footage if they wanted to. And this is the first real use of it, at least on the website, that I've seen them do. And I just thought that was a really cool thing. And I hope they show this footage on Raw Monday night. Even if it's only in passing, you know, before they go to a commercial break, kind of previewing the match yet to come later on. Here's a quick clip from, you know, 4 years ago of a young Ryback in there with Brad Maddox, just to show that they have a history with each other. I just thought that was a really cool move, and I want to give them credit for that. I would like to see them do more of that, actually. Kind of playing off old history and showing old footage like that. One of our listeners, Shane from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, suggested that WWE give Brad Maddox a decisive win over Ryback this Monday. He thinks it could launch Maddox into an upper mid-card position in one night. And I had to stop myself from laughing. Not as much as I did when I mentioned before that Vince and Triple H flew in, you know, in the event that Linda won her race. That was funnier. But I had to stop myself from laughing at the idea of giving Brad Maddox a clean victory over Ryback, him being the first person to score a clean, decisive win over Ryback. I understand the point that Shane is trying to make about there not being this great dearth of main event talent right now in WWE, but beating Ryback, not the right idea. Let alone having Brad Maddox be that person. Let alone it being 6 days before Survivor Series, where Ryback is in the main event challenging for the championship. I mean, really now. So, Miz opened the show by quitting Team Punk, as I mentioned before. We had a six-man tag actually open the show. Antonio Cesaro teamed up with the Primetime Players against Rey Mysterio, R-Truth, and Sin Cara. And the crowd was really into this match. They really were into Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara in particular. The babyfaces won after R-Truth pinned the United States champion Cesaro, so I guess they're setting up a U.S. title feud between Cesaro and Truth. We had the next chapter in the saga that is Vicky Guerrero, AJ, and John Cena. And they showed more footage from the hotel room hallway. And I don't know. I mean, whatever. You know my thoughts on this. I really don't have to go into the details here. The only good thing about this segment was the crowd. The crowd was playing along with it. They just wanted to have fun. So they were cheering for certain things. They were cheering their butts off for AJ. These people loved AJ. She was maybe the most over person on the entire show. They were very disappointed when she only popped up on the Titantron and didn't actually come out to the ring. But she got a much bigger pop than even John Cena did. I don't know if that's good or bad. But that was basically that. They are moving the story along, not fast enough for me, because the quicker they move it along, the quicker it'll be over. That's the only good thing about it. We had Daniel Bryan against Cody Rhodes. A very short match. Very disappointed in that. You would think this crowd in the UK would have appreciated a longer Daniel Bryan match, and this thing went barely 3 minutes. Cody pinned Bryan with the Crossroads. Then we had Kane in an impromptu match with Damian Sandow, and Kane beat him with a chokeslam, so even Steven. One person gets a win, the other person from the other team gets a win, and we're no closer to knowing which team is better. I guess we'll just have to wait for the rematch. Sheamus beat Miz, because Miz is a loser. And Big Show was on commentary for this match. I thought he did a fine job. I enjoyed Big Show on commentary. I was checking comments on Twitter during this match, and people were, for the most part, not happy with Big Show on commentary. They thought he was terrible at it. They thought he was overly obnoxious and annoying. First of all, he's supposed to be obnoxious. He's a heel. That's number one. Number two, I didn't find him to be any more overbearing than any of the other people that normally do commentary on WWE. So I thought Big Show did a fine job here. And if he wants a career in broadcasting when his in-ring career is over, he can have one. Speaking of announcers, by the way, may as well mention it here, two big pieces of news. First of all, Jerry the King Lawler returns to the Monday Night Raw announce booth this Monday night in Columbus, Ohio, 2 months after suffering a heart attack on the air. The King is back in the booth this Monday, and Jim Ross will be there as well. So we're going to get a three-man announce team on Raw this week. Jim Ross, Jerry Lawler, and Michael Cole. My guess would be that it's a one-week-only thing. They're going to keep Ross there so Lawler can come back. They could all be there together. And then the very next week, my guess is that we'll be back to the two-man booth of Michael Cole and King. If they keep it as a three-man booth with JR, I have no problem with that. I think three is a crowd. But those three, I think, work well together. Anything to keep JR on TV. He's been very, very good since he came back. Maybe a little rusty week one, but him and Michael Cole have developed a very nice rapport. They've developed a very nice chemistry, especially since Cole is not, you know, insulting Ross and being the uber heel on commentary anymore. He is the play-by-play guy, which is what he should have been in the, you know, to begin with. And he's good in the role. And JR and King together obviously work well. We know that. They have a chemistry that goes back well over a decade. I'm not worried about dropping Jim Ross into the middle of the Michael Cole, Jerry Lawler tandem. I think they would work very well together, but I still think it's only going to be for 1 week. So if it is, enjoy it, because we don't know if JR will be around or not after this week. But he'll be there, and I expect a great ovation when the King walks out. Hopefully they don't. They're not dumb enough to actually bring the King out pre-show like they normally do with the announcers, and he'll just be sitting there when Raw goes on the air. That would be goddamn stupid. Raw should open with Jerry the King Lawler's introduction, coming out to a hero's welcome down to the ring, and then if they want to, they can go into the normal Raw intro. That's how I would do it. Speaking of announcers, one other piece of news here. JBL announced on his Facebook page this week. He did a YouTube video, put it up on Facebook. He has signed a new contract with WWE. He is back full-time, not as an in-ring performer, but as an announcer. And I believe the plan is for him to be the color guy on SmackDown only, although maybe he'll be on pay-per-views too, I don't know. I would imagine he will be actually on pay-per-views, but for SmackDown, he will be the color commentator with Josh Matthews. The way that he was talking about this, it doesn't sound like Michael Cole will be the play-by-play guy on SmackDown anymore. Unless he stopped being the play-by-play guy, and I'm not aware of it, it will be Matthews and JBL as the team on SmackDown, Cole and King, maybe, with JR on Raw. This is great news. I'm very happy to hear this. I love JBL on commentary. I think he's one of the best. Again, you have people who don't like him and think he's obnoxious, but that's who he is. That's his job. And it's just funny for me to look back when I did that rant, I guess, on Jerry Lawler as a commentator, which I stand by. Again, I got nothing against the King, but my argument before he had the heart attack is no different than it is now after he had the heart attack, and that is that Lawler has lost a step and is not the same as he used to be, and that may just have more to do with the role he's playing. You know, he's not the heel like he used to be during the Attitude Era, the pre-Attitude Era days. He was far more entertaining in that role and far more offensive. Now he's just the hero who comes out and people cheer for him, and he's this ultra good guy, and he'll just say whatever WWE has him say. And the stuff they have him say when he's plugging social media garbage and whatnot, it just sounds so insincere coming from King, and I think that's what kills it for me. It's one thing for Michael Cole to say something insincere, that's who he is, but to hear Jerry Lawler saying stuff like that, it always just makes me cringe. And I, you know, and the first thing I actually advocate, if you go back and listen to that episode of the Sound Off, where I talked about this, and I gave three different ideas that WWE could do in terms of replacing Jerry the King Lawler. My first idea was to bring back JBL. And I actually dismissed the idea outright just because JBL had made it clear that it wasn't something either he was interested in or that he would have time for. Obviously, something changed. He must have really enjoyed coming back and enjoyed it so much that he decided to sign a new deal and fit it into his schedule. He's a very busy guy. I mean, he's still climbing mountains. He's got the charity for the kids in Bermuda that he does. He tapes shows for Fox Business Channel. And so now he's going to find time to be an announcer. But that was my first thought when I talked about it on the Sound Off that time. Bring back JBL. I didn't actually think it would happen. And now it has. And I'm very happy to hear that. I still think that my idea of splitting the announce teams up on Raw is a sound one because the show is just too long. And to have one announce crew take the first half and another announce team take the second half, that way you don't need three people on commentary at once if that's what they're going to do. You can have two and two. I mean, I still like that idea, and I think it would have made more sense for WWE to go in that direction, not TNA, you know, where TNA now has two different announced teams for both hours. But as you see with TNA, it's a small way to freshen things up a little bit. But JBL's announcement was very well received. I was very happy to hear that. And I know I end up watching Raw more than I watch SmackDown, so who even knows how much of JBL I'll actually get to hear. I can't necessarily say that I'll be able to watch SmackDown from start to finish every week now that he's back on commentary. So hopefully he'll pop up maybe on Raw every now and then. But very good news. Divas tag team match. Layla and Caitlyn beat Eve and Oksana when Caitlyn pinned Eve. The Divas stopwatch this week was clocked at just about 4 minutes 48 seconds, which is actually way above average. I did like how JR talked about stopwatches during this match. Just thought that was kind of interesting. We had Kofi Kingston in a match against Alberto Del Rio. Kofi beat Del Rio after Del Rio was distracted by Randy Orton's theme music. You would think that people's theme music, it's like a person, you know, like the theme music actually comes down to the ring and taps them on the shoulder or pinches their ass or something. We see this over and over and over again where people, their music hits and the dumb heel in the ring gets distracted and they turn around long enough to get rolled up for the pin. So Alberto Del Rio fell victim to the same syndrome. He's a dumbass. He got rolled up, and Kofi Kingston pinned him, and that was that. We had Epico and Primo against Zack Ryder and Santino, or Team Cobra, I guess is what they're calling them now. Santino pinned Epico with the Cobra. I don't know what that says about the future of Primo and Epico, but it don't look good. I think Rosa Mendez sees that, too, because she's been making overtures of late to Alberto Del Rio. They had that little meeting, all 5 seconds of it on Monday night, where she kind of bumped into him in the back, and I think the same thing happened on SmackDown. So clearly, Rosa is looking elsewhere. She is looking to bounce from this tag team and actually pair off with a winner, but if that were the case, then she's looking in the wrong place, because Alberto Del Rio loses almost every match he's in, at least on pay-per-view. Rosa Mendez doesn't know how to pick men, it looks like. Well, actually, if you judge by that TMZ story a couple months ago, she really doesn't know how to pick men. We had Wade Barrett and Brodus Clay in a match. And Wade Barrett was, you would not believe how over Wade Barrett was here in England. But once I realized that Raw was in fact in England, this was the part in the show where I was really, really struggling to pay attention here. And I heard the reaction that Wade Barrett got, and at first I couldn't understand it. And then I realized, oh yes, Raw's in England this week. I had forgotten. And these people loved Wade Barrett, and he beat Brodus Clay with his new finisher. And he was beloved by the people in jolly old England. Wade Barrett, I've said it before, I'll say it again, future world champion. This guy's going to be something as long as he can stay healthy. I think he'd already be world champion, quite frankly, if he didn't fuck up his elbow back in February. He'd already be there. It just delayed the inevitable. So the next match we got in this very, very long show was Jey Uso against Heath Slater of the three-man band. Unfortunately, Drew McIntyre was not with the band this week. His mother has fallen ill, and he is tending to family affairs. And my best to him on that, because that sucks, and hopefully things will improve there. So it was a two-man band this week. But Jey Uso and Heath Slater, I mean, really? This is what you put out there? It's no wonder I was falling asleep during this. I just realized why I was falling asleep during the third hour. It's just... I know that having the third hour gives them the opportunity to put people on TV, in theory, that don't normally have a chance to be on TV. If Heath Slater and Jey Uso is the best you can do, you don't need a third hour. Okay, if Heath Slater was going to be the next big thing, and you wanted to give him some spotlight and put him in there, but you knew that Heath Slater at some point was going to be the next big star, that's understandable at least. These are just two mid-card goofballs that they're not going to do shit with. They just had to fill time, and this was the best they could come up with. You could hear a pin drop during this match. Just unbelievable. Three-man band is over with a lot of people, but even they could not save this match, and partially because Drew wasn't there. I think Drew personally is one of the best parts of the three-man band. Just the fact that it's so different than the character he was portraying for so long, and he probably just doesn't give a shit anymore because he knows he's not going anywhere, so what does he have to lose? He goes out there, he's like, you know, he's bobbing his head up and down, headbanging. I mean, it's just completely preposterous, but I actually love the guy for it, so I'm very sad he wasn't there this week. Main event was CM Punk and Dolph Ziggler as tag team partners against Ryback and John Cena, the first ever tag team pairing of Ryback and John Cena, and it was a successful one. Ryback ended up delivering shell shock to the WWE champion. He got a pin on CM Punk. Not just a visual pin, he got the pin. He pinned the champion. So that's kind of a big deal going into their Survivor Series match. And that's how they went off. They actually went off the air with Cena staring down Ryback as though he didn't like the fact that Ryback was stealing the spotlight. You know, you would think that John Cena would actually love the fact that Ryback is getting some of the spotlight, seeing as how John Cena was his biggest cheerleader for the last month. He was Ryback's biggest fan. He's the one who gave up a shot at the WWE Championship, specifically so Ryback could challenge for it at Hell in a Cell. All of a sudden, Ryback's gotten over. It seems like John Cena doesn't like that. John Cena wants to make sure that Ryback is stopped in his tracks here. I don't know. Sounds pretty heelish on his part. But anyway, that sets up the Survivor Series, the new Survivor Series main event. Perhaps this Monday they'll scrap that as well, and they'll give us a completely different main event. I'm only half joking when I say that, by the way. I really don't know from one week to the next what they're going to do. SmackDown aired live this week. Special Super SmackDown from England aired on Tuesday night. Election Day. That seems pretty stupid to me, to air SmackDown on Election Day. I'm not quite sure what the reason for that was. But suffice to say, I, as many other people in this country, had more important things on my mind than watching SmackDown. And I would have missed most of it anyway because I was stuck in line for 2 hours waiting to vote, which is completely ridiculous. And once I got home, all my other time that night was spent glued to the TV watching Election Returns. So I didn't see SmackDown live, but I did go back and watch the parts that I felt were noteworthy. I saw the cell phone footage of a pub fight. You know, William Regal was with Sheamus, and Big Show came and attacked him. And, you know, this was... It was unique. I would like to see them do more of it where they film stuff like this kind of on location from someplace other than the arena. So I'm into stuff like that. Kofi Kingston beat Miz. This is noteworthy only because it is now the fourth straight time that Kofi Kingston has beaten Miz, which in WWE land means that Miz is probably well on his way to getting a rematch and his next Intercontinental Championship. Because, you know, he's been beaten 4 times, so that makes him the number one contender. Primetime Players got a clean win over Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara. Noteworthy because I just talked about the Primetime Players last week, and or maybe the week before, about they were in trouble. They were in trouble because all they've been doing lately is losing over and over and over again. And to see them get a clean win over Mysterio and Sin Cara, probably the most pushed tag team aside from Daniel Bryan and Kane, is an encouraging sign. I only wish it would have happened on Raw, where more people probably would have seen it. But that was still a good thing. And the main event was a Falls Count Anywhere match. Randy Orton and Alberto Del Rio. Orton wins. Pretty good match. I enjoyed it for what it was. And that was SmackDown. Otherwise, it was just a show. Again, nothing of any great note happening on SmackDown this week. So that takes care of the main WWE shows. I have not yet had a chance to go back and watch Main Event, which had a match. A main event... on Main Event, of Sheamus and Wade Barrett, which sounds like a great match. I know they've had a couple of other matches recently, and I still maintain this could have been a WrestleMania main event as early as next year for the World Heavyweight title, which probably means they would have opened the show, but still. I guess they could still go there if they wanted to, but, you know, Barrett and Sheamus now have had, what, at least three matches, maybe four on TV, including their match from Wednesday. That's a little bit of overkill. So I hope to go back and watch that match. I haven't read anything about it. I don't even know how it was. I've been out of the loop on that. Very busy this week, but I do hope to go back and watch that. I did check out Impact Wrestling, TNA, on Thursday night. I was blacked out of it last week. No thanks to my cable company. There was a lot of people still without power and electricity, believe it or not. No heat, no water. There's still people who have none of that stuff after the recent hurricane. A lot of people homeless. So I really should not be complaining, given what a lot of other people around these parts are going through. But I did not see Impact last time. I got to see it this week. Turning Point is the TNA pay-per-view that is actually coming up tonight. I almost forgot about it. We have a main event. Jeff Hardy will be defending the World Heavyweight Championship in a rematch against Austin Aries. It will be a ladder match. Bobby Roode, James Storm, and AJ Styles will have a three-way match for the number one contendership. And basically, the gist of it is this. Whoever wins the match becomes the number one contender for the TNA World Heavyweight title. The loser, okay, whoever gets pinned or submits in this match, that person will not be able to get another shot at the TNA Championship until, at the very least, Bound for Glory of 2013. So basically, they don't get a title shot for a year. I look at the lineup of guys in that match, and if I had to pick the person to get pinned, in all honesty, I'd probably go with AJ Styles. Because if you have James Storm lose, unless he's going to end up going heel or something like that, you know, James Storm has already been damaged enough by plans changing. Originally, he was going to win the Bound for Glory series and beat Bobby Roode at Bound for Glory. It didn't quite work out that way. But he got a big win over Bobby Roode at the pay-per-view, and it looks as though he is being groomed, perhaps, as the next challenger. I could actually see James Storm winning the match. But having James Storm get pinned and not get a title shot for a year, I just don't see that happening. As far as Bobby Roode is concerned, I don't know if they're going to put the title back on Bobby Roode at any point or not. But he's still one of the biggest heels you have in that company, outside of you know, Austin Aries and I don't know, maybe Devon, perhaps, from Aces and Eights. But AJ Styles, you know, he's been around for so long. He's won the championship a whole bunch of times. He hasn't really been involved in any main event level feuds of late. He's been doing the tag team thing with Kurt Angle, the Claire Lynch stuff, which we'd rather forget about. I don't know that AJ Styles is somebody they're going to be putting in the title picture soon anyway, so it almost seems safer to just have him take the loss in that match. I guess we'll find out. We have Kurt Angle challenging Devon of Aces and Eights. What a riveting match that should be. Chavo Guerrero and Hernandez will defend the tag team titles against perhaps the best tag team still in wrestling, Chris Daniels and Kazarian. Samoa Joe and Magnus will meet for the television title, no disqualification. Tara and her boy toy, Jesse Godders, will take on the team of ODB and Eric Young, the reigning TNA Knockouts Tag Team Champions. And why in the hell do you need Knockouts Tag Team belts in TNA anyway? Can somebody explain that to me? Just do away with that. It's just completely unnecessary. Joey Ryan will challenge Rob Van Dam for the X Division Championship, and they've added a match that involves one Joseph Park. He'll be facing one member of Aces and Eights, Doc. Doc, of course, being the unmasked Luke Gallows, who actually competed for the first time, maskless at least, on Impact this past Thursday night. I thought, you know, overall it was a good show. I enjoyed it. I think the announce team of Jeremy Borash and Todd Kennelly, I believe is his name, are gelling nicely, I think. And, you know, again, they got the Aces and Eights stuff still going on. They haven't unmasked anybody new this week. They didn't, at least. Maybe next week they will. But they've made it very clear that losing your mask is a big no-no. Somehow it's a sign of dishonor by losing your mask. I don't know why, but apparently it's very important to Aces and Eights, which tells me that we're not going to be getting somebody unmasked every single week or every other week, which makes me very sad because it just means that this stuff is going to continue to drag on unnecessarily. And as good as somebody like Bully Ray, for example, has been in the role of challenging Aces and Eights, and I've enjoyed his work in this whole thing, it's not enough to save the angle for me. It's still dragging. They still need something to happen here. And Joe Park was on Impact this week begging Hulk Hogan to allow him to wrestle. Of all people to come out and stick up for Joseph Park, out came Bully Ray. And Bully Ray basically convinced Hulk Hogan to allow Joe Park to step back into the ring. He will meet Doc of Aces and AIDS at the pay-per-view tonight. And I'm just watching this segment on Thursday night thinking to myself, there's got to be something here. Bully Ray, I still maintain that Bully Ray is going to end up with Aces and AIDS somehow. If not both he and Joe Park. One or the other, if not both, I still maintain will end up with Aces and AIDS. I think that's what this is building to. And again, what the reasoning is for that, I have no idea. At this point, if Bully Ray did join Aces and AIDS, it's just completely stupid. Just because if you were going to pull the trigger on that, you do it at Bound for Glory. Instead, you know, Bully Ray was a perfectly fine tag team partner for Sting. And you know, they got beat. He's been coming at every week. Aces and AIDS now is going after him. I mean, it's at this point, to do that turn wouldn't make sense. Some other notes on Impact. The show actually opened with a hell of a match. A really good match between AJ Styles and Bobby Roode. Bobby Roode beating AJ Styles. They had James Storm on commentary, and I said before how good Big Show was. I felt doing commentary on Raw during the Sheamus Miz match on Monday night. I thought James Storm did a hell of a job himself in the announce booth with Kennelly and Borash at the beginning of Impact. I thought he did a fine job. And he kind of played into the finish there, came down to the ring, provided a bit of a distraction. So all three guys in this triple threat match, no love lost there. But Bobby Roode goes over. They give him a lot of time, too. This match probably went, this match probably went a good 12 to 15 minutes or so. So that was pretty good stuff. Sting and Kurt Angle were tag team partners on this show. They had a match against the Aces and Eights, D-Von and Doc. And the match ended in a disqualification. Doc brought a hammer into the ring and attacked Sting with the hammer. Okay, Kurt Angle was knocked outside. And they did a very brutal injury angle on this show where Doc took this hammer and absolutely destroyed Sting with it. Just beat him with the hammer over and over and over again. And it was like a ball pin hammer, I think they refer to it. Sting's laying there. Doc hits him in the hand, presumably breaking his hand. Then he hits him in the leg. He hits him in the chest, the sternum, the other hand, the leg. This is a hammer he's using on this poor guy. This is Sting. This is the first inductee into the TNA Wrestling Hall of Fame, one of the most beloved figures in the entire company. This attack went on for far too long without somebody coming down to help Sting. That's number one. Number two, Sting has now been killed with a hammer. I've seen people die in movies from fewer hammer shots than Sting took in the ring here on Impact. You would think this is an injury angle. Clearly, it's designed to get Sting off TV for a while. I don't know if his contract is coming up. It's, you know, we're coming up towards the end of the year, the time of year where normally Sting's contract comes due, because each year he extends his contract, he renews it by 1 year. So perhaps we've seen the last of Sting on Impact. I would think not, but you never know. So it's an injury angle. You would think, okay, where's the gurney? Where's the backboard? Where's the stretcher? No stretcher. Sting has just been killed. And instead, they send some guys, finally, after eternity, to come down to the ring to help Sting, and they carry him out. It's just mind-boggling to me. This was a very brutal, a vicious injury angle here, and you don't even send a stretcher. There's not one stretcher in the entire Impact Zone. I mean, what if you had somebody that had, a neck injury? Could you force that person to stand up? Carry them to the back? This was dumb. But it was brutal. I will say that. If that's the effect they were going for, it certainly was brutal. We've seen so many angles like this, though. It doesn't have, I think, the intended effect that it should. People still look at it and they laugh. Ah, it looks fake and all that. But this was heavy stuff here, and I just felt like in the end, this should have been something where they get a stretcher out there. String has to, you know, Sting is as a man of pride. He doesn't ever allow himself to be carried out, but here's Sting being carried out. He, you know, this is a sign of how seriously this man is injured, and, you know, they could wheel him out to the back to a waiting ambulance. I don't even know if they have ambulances in the Impact Zone. I don't think we ever saw. Poor Sting had to walk out on his own power. He had two guys helping him, but still, I thought that was very dumb. We had Christian York, who had a gut check match last week, which I never got a chance to see. But I heard that didn't look good. I heard that he looked very old. And he is older. You know, he's 35 years old. I would hardly say 35 is old. But I guess by wrestler standards, when you've been in the business as Christian York has for 16 years, 35 is a lot closer to the end of your career than it is the beginning of it. So I was just going by what I read and what I heard from some of you guys, because I never did get a chance to go back and watch the match. But Christian York came out, not for nothing. I don't know if the guy's on anything or not. Physically, he's in very good shape. Okay, physically, I read reports that said he looked like the wrestler. You know, he looked like Mickey Rourke in The Wrestler last week. The only similarity I see there is, you know, the long hair, maybe, okay? Or the tan, the fake tan. The fact is, he was in very good shape. He didn't come across to me as being broken down or anything like Mickey Rourke was in that movie. So that was a bit of an exaggeration by people. But they had the gut check judges out there. They had Taz out there, Bruce Pritchard, Al Snow. And he cut a promo. They went to the judges. Taz said unequivocally, yes. Bruce Pritchard teased it for a few seconds. You thought he was going to say no, maybe, and they would put it in the hands of Al Snow. But it never got to Al Snow. Bruce Pritchard said yes. It was a clean sweep. And Christian York wins a contract. He wins a TNA contract. It was a good feel-good moment. They even showed a picture. Dixie Carter tweeted a picture afterwards of Christian York coming through the curtain, hugging D'Lo Brown in the back. I'm sure it was a very emotional time. The fact is this. I have no problem with them giving Christian York a contract if they keep him on television. That was the first thing I said on Twitter. I can, you know, congratulations to Christian York. Now, let's hope next week he's on TV. Because what we've seen so far, with the exception of Joey Ryan, one of the few guys to actually lose, and yet he's the one now who's on television, and he's going to be challenging for the X Division title. Everybody else, almost, who's gotten a vote of confidence, a vote of yes, has been relegated back to OVW, and we haven't seen them on television. So I hope that Christian York, who obviously has no time left to spare, if he wants to try to make a name for himself, you know, on television and become a bigger star, you got to put him on TV now. You know, Christian York doesn't need OVW. Christian York needs to be on Impact next week, and the week after that, and the week after that, and let's see if they can make some money with this guy. Let's see if the guy can get over. Let's see if he can be more than just a challenger for the X Division title. So anyway, this was a feel-good moment, but I'm a little perturbed. I have to say, you know, Taz is a gut-check judge. And I don't know if anybody else noticed this, but during the week on Twitter, he and Christian York were all chummy-chummy. They were tweeting back and forth. They were, you know, it was like a mutual admiration society on Twitter between the two of them. And if this were a real competition, I'd be a little put off by that. I mean, after all, Taz is supposed to be impartial. He's a judge. So, anyway, I don't know if that was Christian York trying to influence the judges or not, but if it was, it worked. That's for sure. We had Hulk Hogan was on the show. He was in the back. He was all freaked out about Sting's injury. You would think if he was that freaked out, he would have sent an army of TNA guys out there to save him, but he never did. Matt Morgan was in his office. They had another face-to-face confrontation. It was one of the same, we've seen this before, where Matt Morgan threatens Hogan or gets up in his face and then walks away. And Hogan, who up to that point is feigning fear and disgust for this man, all of a sudden he starts smirking or smiling and, you know, saying he's got it, you know, he understands it, or who knows? Who knows where they're going with this? Chris Daniels, Kazarian, and Magnus, six-man tag. They beat Samoa Joe, Chavo Guerrero, and Hernandez. Again, pretty good match. You know, they gave them a little bit of time, and, you know, in the end, Magnus got the pin on Joe, which sets up their TV title match for the pay-per-view, which makes total sense, so that was fine. Austin Aries came out for the final segment. Jeff Hardy ended up coming out. They brawled a bit. Jeff Hardy climbed a ladder and posed with both championship belts, so I presume it's going to be WrestleMania 10 at Turning Point, where they have two title belts hanging above the ring. Jeff's personal title and the other title, which Hulk Hogan told Austin Aries in no uncertain terms on the show, if you don't give that belt back to Jeff Hardy because it's not your property, you're going to lose your title shot. So there's Jeff Hardy on top of the ladder posing with both belts. Austin Aries comes and knocks him off the ladder, takes a big bump, Jeff does, crashing down to the canvas. And that's how Impact went off the air, promoting the main event for Turning Point, ladder match between Hardy and Aries, which has the potential to be a fantastic match. So we'll see how that goes. I don't expect Aries to get the championship back. I would actually be shocked if Austin Aries won the title back. So I would say Jeff Hardy goes over and maybe challenges James Storm, perhaps. Or if they want to do a Jeff Hardy, Bobby Roode feud, they can go in that direction as well. Another reason why I figure AJ Styles has taken the fall in that triple threat match. I just feel that way. Speaking of Jeff Hardy, there's another piece of TNA news from this week I wanted to address here. Scott Steiner has filed yet another lawsuit against TNA. He filed this week in Nashville. The Big Bad Booty Daddy alleges that TNA allowed a chemically incapacitated Jeff Hardy into the ring during a house show in Mount Pleasant, Michigan. This would have been last fall. While, quote, under the influence of alcohol and possibly drugs, end quote. And Steiner, who is claiming nerve damage in his neck and back, as well as an injury to his biceps as a result of Jeff Hardy, he is alleging that TNA knew or should have known that Hardy was too incapacitated, intoxicated, and or under the influence of a controlled substance and should not have been allowed to enter the ring, thus endangering his, being Steiner's, life, health, well-being, and safety. He is asking for $750,000 in damages. Now, according to, I first saw this on ProWrestling.net, Jason Powell mentioned the match in question that Steiner is referring to took place on November 3rd, 2011. It was at a house show. Hardy teamed up with Rob Van Dam against Scott Steiner and Bully Ray. It was the main event. And Steiner, in his suit, is alleging that Hulk Hogan was in charge of Hardy's actions, along with, quote, writing and approving the script for the match. The thing about it is, it was a house show. Okay, so Hulk Hogan was not even there. I doubt he had anything at all to do with that match. So, that's number one. Steiner and TNA have a hearing already set. I think November 30th, I read, is the date. That's in regard to TNA attempting to dismiss Scott Steiner's first lawsuit that he filed against the company. TNA filed a countersuit, to that. But Steiner alleges that TNA breached his contract by failing to pay royalties. TNA's argument is that Steiner has to give them 30 days notice of the breach in order to give them a chance to repair whatever mistake they may have made. So anyway, that whole lawsuit is still pending. Okay, this all stemmed from Scott Steiner going on Twitter and bad-mouthing Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff and Dixie Carter and Brooke Hogan. I mean, he was saying some really nasty stuff about really all of the TNA executives on there for a while until TNA decided to file suit against him, and then he stopped. So now they're going back and forth with all these lawsuits. And the thing about this latest lawsuit is this. Steiner is alleging that he was hurt essentially by Jeff Hardy, okay, in a match with Hardy almost, not even almost, it's been over a year, okay, over 1 year ago. Is it hard for me to believe that Jeff Hardy was under the control of some sort of substance, perhaps, and that this could have happened? Of course not. I could easily see it, because at that time, Jeff Hardy was apparently in a different state than he's in now. Jeff Hardy, by all accounts, is a model employee. He's, you know, been on the up and up. They've had no issues. He hasn't no-showed any shows. He hasn't appeared to be intoxicated or anything like that. That's why they put the title back on him. That and the fact that his contract is coming up for expiration in February. So again, not out of the realm of possibility at all to think that there is perhaps some truth to this. And I certainly was no fan of Jeff Hardy coming out of the Victory Road debacle last year, although I put a lot of that blame on TNA. Okay, that was their fault, what happened at Victory Road. That was their responsibility. Putting Hardy out there in the state that he was in for that pay-per-view was an atrocity. It was a disgrace. In this case, my thought is this. I'm a little suspect of Scott Steiner coming out a year after this supposedly happened and basically throwing Jeff Hardy under the bus. Jeff Hardy, like I said, appears to be in a very different place, a much better place in his life now. If Scott Steiner is telling the truth, he should have come out with this after it happened. And he didn't. This is the first anybody is hearing of this. Steiner was hurt. He did suffer. I remember, he suffered a bicep injury. I don't remember what the reasoning was. It could have very well have been from this match as a result of something that Jeff Hardy did. But if this happened, I mean, you have a responsibility to come out with it after it happened or shortly after it happened, and that did not take place. You're coming out a year later and saying, hey, by the way, in a match a year ago, this guy hurt me. And by the way, he was on drugs. Or he was drunk. And if what he's saying is not true, and he's just making up shit, what a goddamn stupid thing for Scott Steiner to do. That's a pretty low thing for him to do. That's not right. It's not right either way, even if it did happen. If it happened, he should have come out with it when it first took place. But he didn't. So as far as I'm concerned, the statute of limitations on this has expired. You can't go back and whine and complain and piss, bitch, and moan because this guy supposedly injured you in a match a year ago. If the fucking guy was on drugs, for Christ's sake, you have an obligation to tell your employer. What if he goes in there the next night in the next city at some other house show and he's also inebriated and he drops somebody on their head and they break their neck? Do you think Scott Steiner would have felt guilty about that? I wonder if he would have even felt sorry. It's not just his safety. If what he says is true, then Jeff Hardy is putting other people's lives at risk also. Scott Steiner had an obligation to come out with this right after it happened, and he didn't. So I have no sympathy for Scott Steiner. Especially after all the shit that he said about people. It was very entertaining. I'll be the first person to say it was very entertaining when he went on Twitter and said the things he said about Bischoff and Hogan. As brutal as it was entertaining enough. But Scott Steiner is not the kind of person, given the things he's said about people before, that I'm going to have too much sympathy for. And if what he's saying is true, why the hell didn't you come out and tell somebody when it happened? Now, maybe he did. Maybe he didn't. TNA just didn't do anything about it. That's not the impression I get. This is the first anybody, I think, is hearing of this. Maybe it'll come out that he did tell TNA, and TNA suppressed the information, which would make TNA look even worse. But until such time that that evidence is presented, we only have what's being reported. And it just seems like a really slimy move on Scott Steiner's behalf. Especially for a guy who, again, seems to be doing a lot better in his life. And all of a sudden, now this lawsuit is filed alleging that Hardy was intoxicated or under the influence of drugs. And I think this actually, I don't know if this took place during a time period where Hardy was on some sort of probation. This may have taken place shortly after he was released from jail. I think it was, actually. If it's not true and he's making shit up, that's really, really, really low and scummy, I think, on Scott Steiner's part. And like I said, if it is, not to excuse Jeff Hardy's behavior, I certainly would not be the first person to do that, but Scott Steiner should have said something a lot sooner, and if he didn't, that's wrong.
Sala Monster, Sala Monster, Sala Monster. There are many things I can say about you, but one thing I can't say is you're a slacker, because you've been doing the sound off for 5 years. And in that time, we've seen a lot of champions. We've seen a lot of people come and go in the WWE and TNA. And you're the one that has stayed. You have standed the test of time here in professional wrestling. God, you're pathetic. No, I'm just kidding. We love this sport or sports entertainment or whatever the heck you want to call it. As much as we bash it, we love it. And I'm glad that you're leading the way, man. I love the podcast, love the show, and I love it when we get to do SC Scoops Live every once in a while. So congratulations on 5 years, and dare I say, here's to five more.
My thanks to Noah Mark for that. We've got a ton of shout-outs and some questions as part of the mailbag this week. This may be the biggest mailbag yet when it comes to shout-outs and questions. You can email me, as always, at thesolemonster@gmail.com. It's been that way for 5 years. It'll be that way for the next five. thesolemonster@gmail.com. And from Noah Mark, we go to another familiar face, not to be outdone. I also have a shout-out request from one Brian Blade. This is a first. This is for his lovely bride, Robin, who is celebrating her 40th birthday today. Happy birthday, Robin. And I swear, I've had the chance to meet Robin, and she does not look a day over 30, if even that. Whatever she's doing, tell her to keep doing it. It's probably all that vegan eating. Actually, when I was at their home a few weeks ago, I had some vegan cookies, and they were actually amazing. I wish I could remember exactly what they were. But happy birthday, Robin. Your husband wanted to do something very sweet for you here on the Sound Off, and there you go. Also want to wish a happy birthday to David Carvalho, celebrating a birthday on November 9th. Actually, he celebrated a birthday. November 9th, by the way, this past Friday, marked the 15-year anniversary of the Montreal Screwjob. So there's a date in history for you to remember. I actually do remember where I was on November 9th, 1997, the way that other people, baby boomers and whatnot, remember where they were when Kennedy was shot. I remember where I was when Montreal took place. Somehow it just doesn't seem quite the same. But anyway, David will be attending WrestleMania 29 next year, only his second
WWE event, his first since the Survivor Series back in 2002, and I look forward to seeing him in New Jersey because I also will be attending WrestleMania next year. It'll be myself along with Noah Mark, Brian Blade, even Webmaster Mike. We all got our tickets this past week to WrestleMania at MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey. It'll be my second WrestleMania, and I am very much looking forward to that and seeing David there as well. Adam from Cardiff, Wales, says, I've been a listener of yours since late 2007. I would like to say thank you, as you have made me start rewatching WWE and TNA. Speaking of TNA, do you think it's lost its edge since the shows in 2006 up until 2009? I don't think it's as different anymore. Well, first of all, TNA in 2009 compared to TNA today, I would imagine, quite different. You know, it's not like I was watching Impact every single week, but I knew enough about the TNA product to know that it was not as good as it could have been, in large part because of the person in charge of writing it. And when that person got booted out of power and left the company, things started to change for the better. I would say that right now TNA is actually back in a bit of a rut. Not that the television is anywhere near as bad as it used to be. It just seems rather stale right now, like they don't have any buzz, they don't have any momentum. But as far as comparing TNA now to 2006 to 2009, I mean, 2006, when I think of TNA in 2006, I think of Kurt Angle and Samoa Joe. I think of them doing the biggest buy rate for a pay-per-view they've ever done. I think of one of the best build-ups to a world championship match, if not the best build-up to a TNA world title match in the history of that company, which was the brainchild, by the way, of one Dutch Mantel, who they later fired. And after that, it's all just kind of a blur to me, quite frankly. I don't really, nothing ever stands out to me when I think of TNA in 07, 08, 09, other than the prevailing thought that TNA sucked. For years, that's what people thought. TNA sucks. And it was because of Vince Russo, largely. It was because of Vince Russo and Dixie Carter, because she continued to employ him and keep him as the head writer, so they're as responsible as Russo was. I mean, at least, you know, Russo is what he is. You know what you're getting. It's their fault for keeping him around as long as they did. I think TNA now is much better than they were back in those years. 06 maybe being the exception because of Angle and Joe. And I can't remember off the top of my head anything else that they may have been doing in 06. I'd have to go back and refresh my memory. I know that was the year Sting made his return to TNA. He had made an appearance before, at least once. So I don't know that you can really call it his debut, although I think they credit 2006 as being the debut of Sting in TNA, which, again, is not necessarily true. I guess that would be the other big thing about that Sting, this big star that people recognize from WCW coming in as the icon of sorts in TNA. Christian, I wonder if Christian may have been in TNA in 2006. I don't recall exactly when he left. I think he was, actually. Christian Cage was in TNA around that time. But I personally just think that the TNA product right now is as good as it's been in a number of years, and it could be even better. I think they're on the right track. This, maybe not with this Aces and Eights garbage, but I don't think of those years and think, wow, TNA used to be so great. No, TNA used to be shit, and now they're not. And I think going from shit to not shit is an improvement. So I don't long for the old days of TNA. Unless you're one of the original diehards who remembers the weekly pay-per-view days, NWA, TNA, when the X Division was actually something different than everything else in wrestling, I could see that. I could see where some people might miss the early days. But I don't. I don't look back on anything that TNA used to do and think, wow, it used to be so much better back then. Because for so many years, it was not good at all. So I think they're in a good place, and they could get even better. Terry and Nick from Houston write in. They've been listening to the Sound Off for about a year and a half now. They follow on Facebook as well, as should all of you, if you're not. They say, we've been talking about how to fix Michael McGillicuddy and Dolph Ziggler, the two dumbest names in the industry since Beaver Cleavage. We were thinking that since a Paul Heyman stable would be compelling, he should recruit the two of them and issue them different names. After all, he renamed Albert to be A-Train, so that shows he can pull it off. He could play up Joe's dad and say that he should embrace that and go with his real name of Joe Hennig. But Ziggler, it does seem like it's a little late for him, so Heyman can have him give him a nickname or something like that, kind of like Ryback. Then again, maybe just go by Dolph. What do you think? We're on the same page here. Okay, Michael McGillicuddy, as a name, it needs to die. He should be allowed to be Joe Hennig, and just let him go out there and He'll either become a star or he won't, but at least it won't have anything to do with his shitty name. Dolph Ziggler. You know, I played audio at the beginning of the show, actually some classic clips of me ranting on the Dolph Ziggler name. There was a time, like when I did those shows, when you could have changed Dolph Ziggler's name. He wasn't as big of a star as he's now become, and he'll be even bigger going forward. He'll be a world champion at some point. There was still an opportunity for you to have him come out and cut a work shoot promo or do something that would result in either him using his real name. And he doesn't even have to use his real name. You know, it's not like Nick Nemeth is such a marketable name. I mean, it's a fine name, but you could come up with a different name that's not actually his, but at least it's not Dolph Ziggler. But I feel like too much time has passed. The Dolph Ziggler name is now so ingrained in the character. It's so ingrained in the company. He's got a lot of people cheering him. Fans and people in the back who want to see him succeed. They know how good he is. He is one of the best performers in the entire company. I won't say the best. Anytime you have somebody like Daniel Bryan on the same roster, it's going to be awfully hard for me to sit here and call you the best, but he's certainly one of the best. I don't know that you really can bother changing the name at this point. Shortening it to Dolph? Yeah, it's possible. I mean, they've done that with other wrestlers over the years. I remember when Rikishi first came in, they were calling him Rikishi Fatu, and after a while they got tired of it, so they cut the Fatu out, and he was just Rikishi. And I'm sure we could find a bunch of other examples of that. So going from Dolph Ziggler to just Dolph, it could work. Although, again, now you've got fans starting to chant, "Let's go Ziggler," so I don't even know how smart that would be. But my whole argument, I once made this argument on the Sound Off, that back in the day, when you talk to old school wrestlers, okay, go back to the 70s, even the 80s, and maybe even part of the early 90s, you would have an event, whether it was a Raw or some other wrestling event, even just a house show back when they were much bigger deals than they are now. Go to a live Madison Square Garden show in the 80s, and the wrestler names would be on the marquee outside the building. Because back then, the wrestlers are what sold the product. The wrestlers are what sold the tickets for the event that night. Now it's very different. Now, although John Cena may be the biggest name in the entire company, and I guess you could put his name up on the marquee if you wanted to, you don't put the names of the wrestlers on the marquee. The next time WWE comes to Madison Square Garden for a show, it's not going to say, "Come see CM Punk." It's going to say WWE Live. It's going to say Monday Night Raw. Because now the brand is bigger than any individual name. It's the brand that sells. It's not any one wrestler. But back in the day, it wasn't like that. It would mean something when somebody's name would go up on the marquee. Can you imagine the name Dolph Ziggler up on the marquee at Madison Square Garden? I can't. And that was part of my argument at the time. But times have changed. Stuff like that doesn't seem to matter as much. I guess, you know, Dolph can become the biggest star in the company a year from now. And he could go on Good Morning America. He could go on the Today Show. He can go on the Tonight Show. And they can call him Dolph Ziggler, and there'll be people that laugh and snicker, and you just got to overcome it. I mean, it is what it is. It's a silly name, but it's just been far too long, I think, to change it. You could shorten it, but at this point, what's the point? I mean, really, what purpose would that serve? Murr from Lincoln, UK writes in, "Congrats on 5 years of the Sound Off. I came in listening somewhere in the first 10 episodes and have been an avid listener ever since. Your brutally honest and downright hilarious analysis of the world of wrestling is a refreshing change to the other often ass-smooching wrestling podcasts and internet radio shows." He said that, not me. In fact, if any WWE employees listen to your show, they should suggest, easy for me to say, you as the new Raw color commentator. Listening to you call the action in pure Solomonster style would make the 3 hours of Raw bearable again. Well, thank you, Merv. I think they filled that role this past week. I think JBL and Jerry Lawler will be perfectly fine in that role. Anyway, Merv continues here. He says, "That being said, WWE and TNA's nonsensical storylines they feed us each week because someone F5'd the continuity guy does help make for some hysterical Solomonster reviews, so I guess that is the only real saving grace. Congrats for making it 5 years. And keep up the good work." So I very much appreciate the kind words. Got a lot of letters like that this past week. I can't get to all of them, but I wanted to get some of them on the show. And it does, it means a lot to me. Blackleg from the Philippines, another one of our longtime listeners, writes in, "Good day and a happy 5th anniversary to you on the Sound Off. Before I go on, I want to commend you for doing such a great job with the show. It's equal parts entertaining, intuitive, and informative. I started listening on the in the 150s, and I believe I sent in my first email after the emotional sound-off 160. Emotional sound-off 160. I cannot remember what that would have been, unless that was the... maybe that was after the Macho Man passed away, perhaps. I don't know what would have been so emotional about it. Anyway, I like how you remember things from way back and somehow be iffy on ones that happened only recently. For example, you kept mentioning Joey Ryan instead of Joey Mercury on your CM Punk DVD review. By the way, I got a ton of emails about that. And for as much as I may nitpick and stuff like that, I guess I have to be able to take it as well. And you sure let me know about that. So, yes, it was Joey Mercury that I was referring to on that DVD, not Joey Ryan. I just consider that as a barometer on how memorable and forgettable certain events are. As for my favorite moment, it's very minor, but I love how you once used the Scott Steiner "he's fat" soundbite as a transition in between questions on one episode. For some weird reason, that cracked me up. Now that I'm done submitting my resume for the Kiss My Ass Club, here's my question. Like many others, I consider the rage-filled day-after-Raw episodes of the show as the ones that really left the mark. Notables were the infamous Michael Jackson rant and the walkout angle rant. My question is, given what's happening today in all these storylines, can you predict a plausible payoff that could frustrate you so much that you produce another episode the very next day, venting all over the place? A question of mine made it onto the Milestone 200th episode, and I hope this one makes it to the Milestone 5-year anniversary show. Well, congratulations, Blackleg. Your question made it, indeed. As far as, I mean, what would have to happen to make me go on a rage-filled rant the day after a show? I mean, anything, really. Anything could set me off. Some people love Raw, some people hate Raw. I mean, one week, you know, you guys may love it. I may bust out an emergency sound of ripping it to shreds. I mean, I haven't done that in a while. I just don't have the time. But I suppose if the payoff to this Aces and Eights storyline were to come on an episode of Impact, maybe, and it was that bad, perhaps I would do a Friday sound-off or something like that. Although at that point, I probably would just wait until the weekend. As far as Raw goes, it really just depends. I mean, they're going to do stupid shit. It's just inevitable. They can't help themselves. And not every episode of Raw is going to be a home run. But it's inevitable that at some point they will do something really offensive or they will do something really stupid. And I will feel compelled to get it off my chest the day after. And I will admit, sometimes it is very therapeutic for me to do that. It is enjoyable for me, too. But I think it's a good thing I don't do it that often, because that means that, in theory anyway, that they're not doing anything overly offensive, even though we know they are. It's just on a much smaller scale. So I don't know when the next time is I'll do one. Hopefully I won't have to, but you will definitely hear from me on a Tuesday at some point again in the future. I can almost guarantee it. Hopefully it won't be for a while. Tom from the UK writes in, "Happy 5-year anniversary to the Sound Of, though I haven't been listening long. It's already a must-have for the week, and I love it. Was wondering if I could get a shout-out as my birthday is this Sunday the 11th. I will be 19 years old, so happy birthday, Tom." That's today. He is celebrating a birthday. I'm telling you, we have a ton of international fans, especially in the UK. It's like a wrestling hotbed over there. I don't know what it is. Carlos writes in. He says, "Hey, Solomonster, was just wondering if I can get a birthday shout-out on this week's podcast. Pretty pleased with Brown Sugar on Top. I turned 19 today, that being yesterday, and your podcast is so fun to listen to. I'll give Carlos a shout-out just for being cool enough to borrow one of Winston Wolfe's great quotes from Pulp Fiction, although it would have been a lot better if you would have just said, 'Pretty pleased with Sugar on Top, give me the fucking shout-out.' See, that would have been cool. I would have marked out for that. Rick from South Carolina, I would like to give a shout-out to my friend Becca. Her 25th birthday is today. And Rodney, or rather Roddy, I should say, whose 21st is on Monday. My favorite episode of the Sound Off was the very first Sound Off I ever listened to, which was your TNA Daphne lawsuit rant." Yes, I believe that would have been episode 156, one of the more passionate shows I've ever done. That whole story just infuriated me. Still does when I think about it. I'm not really sure the situation as far as knockouts treatment and knockouts pay has really improved all that much. George from Philadelphia, member of the Fantastic Four and loyal listener since early 2008. "I've been here 4.5 out of the 5 years, and every weekend I just cannot wait until the next Sound Off. I have an idea that I think WWE could really use to help build new stars while at the same time building every story and not just your main one. You have a show on air on Sundays before a pay-per-view. Have it be similar to ESPN's NFL Live or Baseball Tonight, and you have a panel of analysts, 3 or 4 guys, maybe have legends or have guys who were not necessarily legends, but they are respected in the business, like a Billy Kidman and a JBL, for a one-hour live show and have them analyze the announced matches on the upcoming Raw, upcoming pay-per-views, and break down the stories behind those matches. You can call it WWE Live or WWE Tonight. On the night of the pay-per-view, have another pre-show air before the pay-per-view to get your fans more hyped up for the show, and then have a post-show, but the show's not actually be on the pay-per-view itself, but still have it on the network that you normally do the shows. This is something I thought of a long time ago, George says, and I just really thought I should finally share this idea with you. So thank you, George. I appreciate that. That's a great idea, and I'm happy you thought of it so long ago, but let me see the timeline here if I can. You started listening to The Sound Off in what? 2008, I believe you said? Which means you surely must have listened to Sound Off 127 back in 2010 when I pitched this very same idea as part of my WWE business review. I believe they should be doing pre- and post-game shows for their pay-per-views with an analyst desk backstage, the whole kit and caboodle. They should do the whole thing. I fully endorse this. And I think there's a real opportunity to make that happen if this new network ever gets off the ground. If not, at least throw it up on YouTube. You know, what George is talking about, I guess, is having the show on, like, USA, right, or Sci-Fi, the traditional channels. I don't necessarily see that happening. I don't know that USA would necessarily be interested in that. They could have done something like that with the third hour of Raw. That there was some talk that Raw from 8 to 9 o'clock would be something like that. And obviously they ditched that idea and they just decided to stretch the show out to 3 hours. But, you know, when I pitched the idea back in 2010, I fully believed that this would be something that they could benefit from, and I still think that way in 2012. I'm kind of surprised they haven't done it. Maybe if the new network ever gets up and running, we'll finally see something like that. Josh writes in, I have been a fan of The Sound Off since my undergrad days. I'm currently in my last year of pharmacy school, and all I do is study and work, but I always make time for your show. If it's possible, can I get a birthday shout-out, as it is my birthday on November 8th. Keep up the strong work. So happy birthday, Josh. You're in pharmacy school, you say. Don't let any wrestlers know that. Udit Sharma from New Delhi, India writes in, if you could live a wrestler's life from any time, past or present, for just 1 week, who would it be and why? I would live Chris Benoit's life from that horrible week in June of 2007. And then I would lock myself in a room and I would swallow the key. That's what I would do. This question comes from Alexander. Do you think that if Wade Barrett wins the WWE or a World Heavyweight title, it would make sense to have William Regal win it first, then build up a feud between the two, which would culminate at WrestleMania, or even the rumored big show that WWE is planning to do in England? I think it's a big-time match and they can make that they could make and would make Wade Barrett as a big star as well. Well, here's my thought on this. If Barrett wins the world title, isn't he already a big star? How does him winning the title and then losing it and kind of going back and forth and having matches with William Regal, how does that make him a bigger star? I love this idea that, and it's not your fault, but they put titles on guys who aren't stars with the hope that the title will make them a star. It just seems kind of ass backwards to me. How does feuding with William Regal make him a bigger star? It doesn't. If he wins the title, he's already a big star. But I do agree, a match or a series of matches between Barrett and Regal, that's something I would love to see. At WrestleMania? No way. It's just not the way that they've positioned Regal these past few years. Absolutely not. He's an announcer. I mean, perception is reality. That is what Regal is right now. It's just not a WrestleMania match. You want to do the match as an attraction in England, I have no problem with that. I'm totally fine with that. In fact, I think, you know, when they were in the UK for Raw this past week, if they would have done a Wade Barrett-William Regal match, I mean, it probably would have gotten the best reaction of the entire show. Would have blown the roof off the place. This comes from Kyle from St. Thomas. I'd like to use my shout-out for Bully Ray. We already knew he was a tremendous heel, but these past few weeks he's been such an awesome babyface. He's even managing to make the Aces and Eights segments some of the most entertaining on Impact. And that angle sucks. For my money, Bully Ray must be the best promo in wrestling today. He deserves every ounce of credit he can get for managing to have such a resurgence so late in his career. I agree with Kyle 100%. Bully Ray consistently is one of the best parts about Impact. And it's funny to me because for the longest time, Bully Ray was the best heel, certainly in that company, but maybe even the best heel in the business. I know people would debate that. They would say Kevin Steen in Ring of Honor is a bigger heel. You know, it's a subjective thing. He was one of the best bad guys in wrestling. I think we can all agree on that. Both as a wrestler, he's fine. He's not anything exceptional, but, you know, he's gotten himself into best shape of his career, moves around the ring very well. It's promos, though. His promo ability has always been top-notch. He just never really had a chance to show it when he was in WWE or in TNA, where he was a babyface for the most part. And when he went heel and became a single star, he just took off. And the funny thing to me is, as much as I say that he was the best heel in the business, now, all of a sudden, these last couple of weeks, he's become one of the biggest babyfaces in the entire company. He could go both ways. I still think he's better as a heel, of course. And the whole Bully Ray character, to me, just goes against what a babyface is supposed to be, which is why I still think he may turn and join Aces and Eights at some point. But it just it's a credit to him as a performer that he can go out there and be an awesome badass heel and on a dime almost turn into one of the best babyfaces in all of TNA. It's a credit to him. He really is. I mean, he's been tremendous. And I agree with Kyle 100% on that. Kyle also has a favorite sound-off moment he wanted to share. He says, I can't remember the episode number, but one of my favorite sound-off rants was on the first show I ever heard. It was a rant against Matt Hardy after he got busted for DUI, and it was glorious. And what Kyle is referring to is actually from episode 175 of the sound-off. Didn't have a chance to go back and edit the clip, but you can go back and listen to episode 175. The thing about the Matt Hardy rant, there were so many of them that I had to specifically ask Kyle to please check and let me know which one he was referring to, because I think there was one on 176 as well. There was one on 126. There was one, I'm sure there were a bunch of others. Matt Hardy was just a complete fuck-up for the longest time. And, you know, he's another example. As good as Jeff Hardy seems to be doing in his life, I can say that Matt Hardy appears also to be on a much better path, let's say, than he was before. You know, it's a hard thing, I guess, to go through when you're addicted to something or you have some sort of substance abuse or you take pain pills or whatever different people do. And Matt Hardy was probably fucked up on so many different things. And he was putting other people's lives in danger, which is, if that's the rant that Kyle was referring to, because he got busted for DUI or DWI just like five different times. And the thing about that really kind of steam my ass is that you're putting other people's lives and safety at risk, you know, when you're on the road doing stupid shit like that. Every time I hear of a wrestler being busted for DUI, it pisses me off for that very reason. It's one thing if you want to hurt yourself, which is dumb enough, but to go out there and there was one time that Matt got busted for DUI. It may have been the time that he was on his way to the airport to pick up his girlfriend, Rebby Sky, and he was swerving and he got pulled over, and if I remember correctly, I mean, he nearly ran a car off the road that had little kids in it. So things were pretty bad for Matt Hardy for a while, and I had my fair share of rants on him on so many sound-offs I lost count. Thankfully, it's been a long time since I've had to do that, and to me, that's good news. Lastly here, Jordan, he's been a listener since episode 124. After seeing Hulk Hogan pop up at the end of a recent episode of The Inbetweeners, I have no idea what that is. My question is, what is your favorite wrestler cameo? Congratulations on 5 years, and here's to five more. In the spirit of the number five, this is the five-year anniversary show, after all. I wanted to end with this question because I have an appropriate answer for this question. My favorite cameo, or one of my favorite wrestler cameos, and I don't even know if this would qualify, per se, as a cameo because, you know, he was on the entire episode. In fact, I think he ended up on a couple of different episodes. But King Kong Bundy. The five count. King Kong Bundy, right? Number five, that's his gimmick. He was on Married with Children very early on in the show's run. He actually came back many seasons later for a wrestling-themed episode where, if I remember correctly, Bud Bundy was dressed up as a bumblebee. And it was a wrestling event, I think, called Wrestlepalooza. And he had to wrestle King Kong Bundy, who ended up squashing him by coming off the middle rope with a splash. But Bundy was on, this is probably the first or second season of Married with Children. He was there, and I forgot the role he played. I think he may have been a member of the family. Obviously, he's got the name Bundy. And so it fit perfectly. And I remember one episode, him putting his head through the door. I have fond memories of King Kong Bundy on that show. So in the spirit of the number five, that would be my favorite wrestler cameo. And on that note, we end the mailbag here on this five-year anniversary edition of The Sound Off. I want to thank everybody who wrote in, including the people who did not get their question on the air. I apologize. I cannot get to everybody, but I do read everything, and I appreciate all the kind comments you've had for me. You can email me for future episodes, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter. @Solemonster is my handle on there. We keep racking up the followers. Hopefully you are among them. Facebook, we're on there as well. Facebook.com/TheSolemonster is the easiest way to go to the official profile page for The Sound Off. Send a friend request. We also have a discussion group on Facebook. If you type in the full name of the show, you'll find it. You can apply for membership. And you can subscribe to The Sound Off in iTunes. Type in Solemonster Sounds Off. You can subscribe for free every time a new episode goes up, no matter what day of the week it may be. You will be among the first to hear it. It will be automatically downloaded for you. It's technology in the modern age. It's an amazing thing. So I want to take this final opportunity here as we wrap this show up, episode 245, to say thank you again. 5 years of The Sound Off. I want to thank Webmaster Mike as well. I'd be remiss if I didn't do that for giving me the opportunity to do the show all those years ago. Something just to offer some original content for the website, great website that is sescoops.com, and it's just kind of grown from there. So thanks, everybody. We'll be back next weekend, episode 246. This train rolls on. We'll have a Survivor Series preview, predictions, all that stuff coming up for the big pay-per-view. And until then, as always, be well, stay safe. See you right back here next week.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
I am AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solemonster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com.